It's time for Shouts from the Back Row, the official podcast of d-back-row.com. My name is Gil, and I'm your host, and with me, as always, are my co-hosts, Robin.
Hello.
And TK.
Hello.
Gentlemen, the 89th Academy Awards are over. The little gold men have been handed out, the red carpet has been rolled up, everyone has gone home. But even though the show is over, the discussion continues here as we deliver the post-mortem on the Oscars in our annual obligatory Oscars follow-up episode. Did Jimmy Kimmel do a good job as host? Were there any serious snubs? Maybe a few huge surprises? I think it's safe to say there's a lot to discuss, so we'll get right to it after this. The Back Row is dedicated to delivering free entertainment to everyone in the forms of media culture blogging, movie reviews, short films, podcasts, and more. That's awesome, I hear you saying. You're right, it is pretty awesome. So why don't you help us out by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes and leaving a review? Just search the iTunes store for Shouts from the Back Row to subscribe to our feed. And if you're feeling generous, visit the-back-row.com and click the donate button to send us a few bucks. Your support means the world to us. We like to open the show with a discussion of what we've been up to. This is a place for us to talk about movies we've been watching, TV shows we've been following, games we've been playing, and just about everything else we've been doing. So, TK, what have you been up to?
Like last week, guys, literally nothing. I apologize. My pop culture has dropped like a rock the past little while.
Just busy at work, I guess.
Oh my god, so busy.
All right, well, Robin, what have you been up to?
Well, I want to start off by talking about the movie Get Out, who I'm sure, and I'm sure Gil is pretty anxious to talk about it as well. This is kind of one of our most anticipated movies of the year. I remember seeing the trailer for it and going, what is this? This looks like one of the more unusual horror films in quite some time. And I was pretty shocked when I saw it was getting 100% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes before that Armand White screwed it up and gave it the one negative review out of like 150, so now it's at 99%, unfortunately. But yes, it is. The movie itself is pretty amazing. It's definitely like a very, very fresh take on the whole horror genre. Like I kind of deduced from watching the trailer that it was about like a young black guy who's got a white girlfriend and goes back to meet her family, and they go into a town where everyone seems kind of prejudiced, even though they are pretty friendly on the surface, and that the only black people in the area, something seems pretty off about them. And it's kind of a nice change on the genre, because usually the whole gag about horror movies is it's the black guy who dies first, and he's usually the least self-aware about the stuff that happens to him. But here in this one, like the lead character Chris pretty much figures out like right from the outset that something is like really, really off, and he's pretty cautious and smart throughout the whole thing, like trying to think that this whole situation isn't normal until he finally unravels what's really going on. And it's more of a psychological one. It's kind of surprising while you're watching it that there is like pretty much no violence until the last act of the movie. Like it's all building up tension and establishing atmosphere and establishing like a sense of dread and unease. And I know I've seen some people write comments online saying that, oh, this is boring. Why is it getting such great reviews? This doesn't live up to the hype. But that's exactly what I loved about it, is because even for long stretches where you feel like nothing is like really happening, it still like has like a great atmosphere where you just know that something terrible could happen right away. Like you, it has like a few horror tropes as time goes on. Like it has a few jump scares and stuff, but as you're watching it, it's like, what exactly is going to happen? Where is this going? Like, and I think the timeliness of when this has come out, I think has benefited the film so much, because there's always concerns about race relations in the U.S. right now. There's even like a gag in this, how the father, played by Bradley Whitford, how his daughter says that the first thing when you go in to meet him, he's going to tell you that he voted for Obama twice and would elect him to a third term if he had to. And that's exactly what happened. And of course, at the time they wrote that, they wouldn't have had any idea who was going to be the president for real right now. So a lot of the stuff in this movie is just kind of timely, the way it looks at like how black people perceive white people look at them and stuff. It's really, really interesting. And it leads up to a great payoff, a great last act that had the audience gasping at several points when I saw it. So I have to admit, I have never seen anything from Jordan Peele up to that point. I've never watched any of his comedies, but on the basis of this, he's one hell of a horror director, and I can't wait to see if he'll continue on in this genre and continue making it, because he's really good at building atmosphere and dread and tension. But he also has a good sense of humor as well, because there are some genuine laughs in this film. It has a real dark sense of humor, which is pretty good. So yeah, thumbs way up for Get Out. It actually did live up to the hype, and I have a feeling it's probably going to remain one of the most memorable movies of the year.
Absolutely. And have I got good news for you, because Jordan Peele has announced that he has at least, I think, three or four more of what he calls these, like, social thrillers, these thrillers based on these sort of social dynamics like racism, and he intends to release these movies at increments over the next decade. So he's got a whole slate of thrillers coming up in the line of Get Out. So I'm excited for that. Yeah, I totally love this movie as well, and I guess I just want to, like, echo everything that you said. This is a really smart and also surprisingly funny. I mean, maybe not surprising given that it's written by Jordan Peele, but it's a really good mix of horror and comedy throughout, and the horror is genuinely frightening stuff, but there are a lot of really funny moments, especially involving the main character's best friend, who is sort of like an overzealous TSA agent, and he just provides a lot of the really funny moments throughout the film, including one. This is a film that really deserves to be seen, and I don't want to spoil any of it, but there is an especially good gag involving the best friend that, I mean, anybody listening to this who's seen the movie knows which one I'm talking about. I just found it to be so incredibly effective. There's so many smart little things about this movie, and the more I thought about Get Out after I'd seen it, the more I realized that there were all these awesome little moments and ideas seeded throughout the film. It's a film that absolutely rewards repeat viewing, I think. And I say that having only seen it once. So at some point, I'd love to do a full podcast after TK has seen it, where we really pick this movie apart. I think there's a lot to talk about. But the elevator pitch for this one seems to be Guess Who's Coming to Dinner meets The Stepford Wives, which I think is pretty accurate. And man, it worked. It worked so well. I was really pleased with Get Out.
Yes, I saw a lot of comparisons to The Stepford Wives, but I think this is way better than The Stepford Wives.
Oh, absolutely.
Both the original and the remake. I think it handles its material much, much more effectively in this one. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I am looking forward to seeing this one again, because I'm sure there was a lot of stuff I missed. Like, there was one reveal near the end where, I won't spoil it away, but it involves, like, some running, and it's like a payoff to a bunch of information that they kind of sprinkled early on in the film, and it's like, oh, I so should have figured this out ahead of time, but I did not, but it was such a great payoff to, like, a lot of the material that they dropped on there. So yeah, it's one of those horror movies where there's so much care and thought put into it, and that's what's so great about it. And it's also a hard R-rated movie as well. It's not PG-13, so it doesn't just shy away from any stuff. It actually presents some pretty brutal material at times.
One of those background ideas that I can talk about without spoiling the movie, because it happens within the first shot of the film, or one of the first shots of the film, when the title comes up, is Daniel Kaluuya's character, the main character Chris, is a photographer. And it's just sort of a character detail initially, but after I thought back on that fact, that detail, after I'd seen the movie, it occurred to me that the opening shot involves like a panning shot of his wall of photographs, and all of his photographs are in black and white. Of course, because the movie is about racism, it's about black and white. Just, that's the sort of clever little detail that hit me after the fact, the more I thought about it. So, yeah, I love that stuff. Also, I want to encourage people to check out other stuff featuring Daniel Kaluuya, because I've actually been a fan of this guy since, I think, maybe one of his first roles. There was a TV show called The Fades. I believe it aired around, like, 2011 or so. and it only ran for one season. It was on the BBC. It's this really cool, almost like Neil Gaiman-inspired fantasy. It's like John Hughes mixed with, I don't know, The Omen, something kind of like that. And just a really well-done single season of a show that didn't get renewed, much to my disappointment. But Daniel Kaluuya plays the main character's best friend, and it's a totally comedic role for him, and he's really great in the role. And other of note about the Fades is that a lot of the cast members immediately went on to do much bigger things after that show. Like Natalie Dormer was on it, as well as the guy who plays Gendry on Game of Thrones. He was one of the main characters. And the main guy has become one of the leads on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So it was evidently a launch point for a lot of careers, but nobody really knows about the Fades. I seem to be the only person who's seen it, so I want to encourage people to check it out, especially for Daniel Kaluuya, and also his episode of Black Mirror, 10 Million Merits. It's not one of my favorite Black Mirror episodes, but it's still really great, and he is fantastic in it.
So yeah, thumbs away up. It's always, this kind of reminds me, it's like every year it seems there's like a horror movie that comes out in the early part of the year, like It Follows and The Witch, which yeah. gets tons and tons of hype. And some people really love it, but some people aren't too fond of it. Like I know some people didn't like The Witch, but this one I say is the best of the bunch thus far. It's really, really good.
So great. Oh, Bradley Whitford is so great in it too, as you pointed out, and I wanted to note, he reminded me of, he was in The Cabin in the Woods, wasn't he?
Yes. So
this guy for every horror comedy. He's so great.
Yeah. He used to be on The West Wing, and he was so great on that, but now he's becoming, like, kind of a horror movie actor, which is pretty interesting, but his presence is so great in this one. He pretty much steals most of the scenes that he's in. And as far as what else I've been up to, I've been watching binge through actually in one night a new true crime documentary series on Netflix called Shadow of Truth. And this crime, that the case that's featured in this series, I had never heard of it before because it's all the way from Israel. And I can't say I'm too much of an expert on true crime from Israel, but this involves like the murder of a schoolgirl who was found like brutally stabbed to death and strangled inside a stall in the bathroom of her high school. And they eventually arrest a custodian who worked at the school, and he gets convicted of the crime, but you kind of get antsy early on when you see that the only real evidence against him was a confession, which he made after like several days of interrogation, but a lot of the physical evidence and stuff does not match him at all. So of course the conviction garners controversy, and this, it's in four parts, and it does like a great way of unfolding it, where the first part deals with like the arrest and the crime, and then the trial. Then the third one, you kind of deal with like the social media effort to try to get this guy out of prison and people who are suspected of being the real killer. And it kind of takes kind of a dark turn because like a lot of the people online start sending threats to people who they think might be the real killers, even though there really isn't evidence that they are. And then it kind of takes a really shocking turn for like the fourth episode, where they present a scenario about who the real killer might be. And holy shit, it is pretty batshit crazy when you find out what might have really happened. But unfortunately, it's still pretty open-ended because in spite of this new information, the guy is still in prison, and this case, they're still trying to fight to get him out. So it'll be interesting to see if this kind of has the same effect as Serial or Making a Murderer, because this is all the way in Israel. So I'm interested to see if like a social media campaign and exposure here in North America will help give enough publicity that they'll start a new reinvestigation into the case. But it is pretty crazy. I watched the whole thing in one night. I think total it's about like three and a half hours, but you just have no idea where it's going and what's going to happen next. And it shocked even me, a guy who studies like true crime all the time now, that the way this case went and like how it could be like a major miscarriage of justice. But I'm glad it's getting exposure on Netflix, because otherwise this case would probably not be known at all outside North America. But if you start watching it, you're not going to want to stop. So I highly recommend you check out Shadow of Truth. It's quite something else.
Is it produced by Netflix?
I think so. I'd have to go and double check that, but otherwise I'm not. Actually, no, I don't think it is, because I think it was produced in Israel, but that they I think they bought the rights to it and decided to put it on the channel.
Hmm.
But it's right up there with like Making a Murderer and Serial. It's pretty addictive true crime stuff. And while we're on the subject, I just released a new episode of The Trail Went Cold this week. This has been a pretty popular one because it involves an unsolved mysteries case. And you've heard me talk about how Unsolved Mysteries is back on Amazon Prime, and they've thus far released the first two seasons. But the case that I did on The Trail Went Cold, for whatever reason, is not on Amazon Prime yet. For some reason, certain unsolved mystery segments from those first two seasons are missing. This one involves the murder of a couple named Mike Reamer and Diana Robertson, and involves strangulation with tube socks. So you know it takes place during like the 1980s, and it's a pretty like pretty ambiguous case and stuff that a killer would go around like strangling people with tube socks, where you just don't know if the father in this one, if he's the actual victim or if he was the killer himself and committed suicide. But it's considered one of the best unsolved mystery segments. So a lot of people this week, since they couldn't watch it on Amazon Prime, were excited to get a podcast about it. So I think I selected it well. So if you're an Unsolved Mysteries fan, I'd advise checking this episode out. And yeah, that's about all I've been up to this week.
So besides Get Out, which again, I highly recommend, and Robin does as well, the only thing I've been up to other than watching the Oscars is I've been watching a TV series called The Good Place. Now, TK, did you ever watch Dead Like Me?
For like half a season, I think.
Did you like
it? I watched like 4 or 5 episodes. That's the girl who becomes the Grim Reaper, right?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, but there was something, I don't know, it didn't hold my interest as much as... other shows similarly would have been.
Do you think that you would like a version of that show where there's a lot more comedy, sort of in the tone of Pushing Daisies, and instead of Mandy Patinkin, it's Ted Danson?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So check out The Good Place. The premise of this, it stars Kristen Bell, and the premise of the show is that she dies. It starts with her waking up in the afterlife. And she has been deemed to be a good person. So she goes to the good place, the heaven. It's not heaven. They just call it the good place, where only the nicest, most deserving people from Earth go after they die. And everybody else goes to the bad place, including like a hilariously long list of very famous good people. So Kristen Bell wakes up in the good place, and Ted Danson is the designer of the place that she will be staying. It's this really beautiful suburban neighborhood with a lot of frozen yogurt shops, and just everybody is so kind and nice. It's a perfect utopia. And Ted Danson is the caretaker, and he shows Kristen Bell around. She has a house that it reflects her personality, so it's all colorful and wonderful. And she's told she's going to meet her soulmate here in the good place, and the two of them will spend eternity together in just perfect harmony and happiness. And then it's revealed very quickly, like, she meets her soulmate, shuts the door and goes, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not the person they think I am. I'm this completely other person who just happens to have the same name as the person they think I am. So she's an imposter in heaven. And she's also just a horrible person. She was just the most selfish, terrible person when she was alive. And so the series is her trying to learn to be a good person so that she can stay, like, sort of so that she can earn her place in heaven, but also just so she doesn't go to hell. And also so that she doesn't get found out. She wants to become a good person so that she can sort of hide and stay in the good place. And it's pretty funny, I have to say. I'm 5 episodes into the first season. I hear that it's been picked up for a second season. And it is really, really funny stuff. Very lighthearted, a lot of lighthearted jokes. Ted Danson is really funny. And overall, very enjoyable and sort of surreal. If you like Dead Like Me, if you like Pushing Daisies, and if you like what I just said, then check out The Good Place. It's a pretty good show. And that is all I've been up to. Now it's time for the Batshit Crazy Movie Countdown. This is a segment where we count down until the release of movies that we think might be the craziest of any given year. And I I don't have a countdown to start yet because none of our potential batshit crazy movies of 2017 have official release dates. However, I do have an update on one of our nominees. I chose the film Bright, which is a David Ayer directed, Max Landis written movie that's like End of Watch meets Shadowrun. Will Smith is a cop and his partner is an orc played by Joel Edgerton in a world where fantasy creatures walk among us. And we saw a trailer for it during the Oscars. It's just a 30-second little spot for Bright. And, guys, I think, you know, I haven't been especially good at picking winners for the Batshit Crazy Movie Countdown. And I think I may have screwed up again because I think Bright actually looks kind of awesome. I think this might actually be a really enjoyable movie and crazy, but not really insane in the same way as, say, The Lobster or Swiss Army Man. Did you guys see the trailer and what did you think?
I just happened to miss it. I remember you messaged me while it was happening saying that Bright had a commercial, but I never did get to see it. But hey, even if it's entertaining, that does not rule out being batshit insane, because Swiss Army Man was our favorite movie last year, and it was still as batshit and as insane as it looked.
It's true. No, I just think this looks like a genuinely fun, like, fantasy action movie. The trailer is on YouTube. It's only 30 seconds long, so give it a look. I think it's pretty interesting, and apparently it'll come out maybe in December. I've seen a few places say Bright will come out December of 2017, so we'll have that to look forward to. And rest assured, as soon as any of these films gets an official release date, I will count down to it. So let's talk about the Oscars. Let's do our obligatory Oscars follow-up. And this is, man, like... in no small terms, this was a very interesting Oscars, especially because we all approached it in just like with no investment. It didn't seem like any of us were very excited about it. I know I certainly wasn't especially excited. Some of the nominated films were pretty good, but there were no like amazing movies like in previous years to root for, like, you know, there was no Mad Max Fury Road equivalent, an awesome movie that really seemed to stand a serious fighting chance at winning these major accolades. It just, none of us were particularly invested, but stuff happened, guys, stuff happened, and we're going to talk about it. But first, I do have to ask a couple of questions, and one of them is, TK, you said on our last episode that you might not even watch the Oscars. Did you watch any of the Oscars?
No, I did not.
Have you watched any clips of the Oscars?
Yeah, I watched a whole bunch of clips, and the last 2 hours I paid attention to through like Twitter updates and things like that. So I had I got to watch and had some news clips going. So like I was aware of what was going on, but I didn't like watch from start to finish. But I did watch a whole bunch of like acceptance awards and like highlights from the next morning.
Dude, I gotta like wag my finger at ya. I mean, this is a film discussion podcast. Why aren't you watching the Oscars?
Because I was doing an inventory count at one of my stores and didn't get out till late.
It's not an excuse.
I know. I crashed, so But I apologize. I know I let myself down. It's not real. Not usually on it. But,
I'm not. I'm only half serious anyway. Because the fact of the matter is, with the exception of a few highlights, I really did find this year's Oscars to be fairly unremarkable. But here's the follow up to that, and we ask it basically every time we talk about the Oscars. Are the Oscars still relevant? Robin, do you think the Oscars are still relevant?
Well, it's kind of funny. Like, now that we're in, like, the social media internet age where it's, like, people can, like, dissect everything down to, like, the last detail, I kind of find that, like, there was so much online discussion about the Oscars and so many people, like, picking it apart and about how it doesn't mean anything and how so many of their decisions are politically motivated. I keep wondering, is it really going to lose its relevance? Because, like you can see by TK, like, he didn't even watch it. He just decided to check tweets and stuff to get updates from it. And I wonder, like, how many people are going to start doing that as time goes on, where it's just like they won't want to sit through the whole thing because they have so much access to read about it online and get live updates that they're just not going to bother to check the whole thing out. Because I've read that, like, ratings have been going down gradually over the past several years, which has made some conspiracy theorists suspect that the ending might have been a publicity stunt for some reason, just to get people talking again. But I don't know. It's just kind of weird how, like, when I was growing up, it always seemed like a must-see event. But it's like this year, not many people I knew personally were actually sitting down to watch it.
I feel like even as recently as last year, though, people were still tuning into the Oscars. I mean, people were tuning in to see if DiCaprio would finally win his Oscar. People were invested, it seemed. I don't know. Do you feel like this is... Because your explanation of it, the way you described it, talking about how people would rather just read social media, find out the winners, and not have to sit through, like, 4 hours of awards show just to get to those key moments. You're not the first person that I've heard say that. I've read, like, think pieces on it about the Oscars and the ratings going down, saying the same thing. But I feel like, even though it's a conversation we always have about the Oscars, whether or not they're relevant, it never seemed like they were totally irrelevant until this year. TK, do you have any thoughts on that? Like, as Robin said, as you said, you didn't watch the Oscars, and part of that really was just disinterest, right?
Yeah, part of it was disinterest and just generally not interested in keeping up with it. Like, it's for the Oscars to really get me, I have to be very interested in the host. Like, I liked Chris Rock. I liked Neil Patrick Harris. Like, I like people.
I liked
with
Ellen. You know,
yeah,
I really appreciated Ellen.
And like, I like Oscars that, like films, have a bit of spectacle to them. And I feel that Kimmel, while he has his ups and downs, I don't think that it was that much of a spectacle. Like, it's why I go to musicals. It's why I watch big films, is for that oomph. And I feel that the Oscars tries to do that and doesn't always hit it. Like, I think the most memorable Oscars, honestly, is probably the Ellen one, since I started watching. Except for this one, for all the weird stuff that happened. But I don't know. It's Kimmel didn't appeal to me very much as a host. You know, if it was another talk show host, I would have been a little better with it. But I think watching Conan host, I think it'd be pretty funny. I think that'd be hilarious, actually. But it's as for whether it's relevant, like I said, I kept up with everything that was going on. I didn't miss a whole lot other than commercials and a bit of red carpet. And I still was pretty informed about what was happening as the night went on. So, like, I think the ceremony is fun, and it's fun to watch highlights. But, like, what was the running time this year? 3.5 hours? 4?
It was, like, 3.5 hours.
Yeah, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And, like, while I'm sure the Academy is going to keep doing it for a number of years, I'm not sure how many people it's going to start pulling in. Like, this is the viewership dropped again this year, despite all the crazy stuff that was happening. So I'd be interested in seeing an hour-by-hour viewership, because I want to see if people tune in to catch, like, the big 4 or the big 5 at the end of the night. I'd be very interested in seeing something like that. And if that accurately reflects it, then I think there's a little more to go on there.
Well, here's something else to consider, though. The Oscars are not the easiest things to legally watch online, I found. There are a lot of sites like ABC... doesn't really, it's very, like, geo-restricted. And so I fully admit, I watch the Oscars by pirate stream. I kind of wonder how many other people do it that way. Because a lot of people, myself included, we don't have cable hookups, you know? There are a lot of people doing the cord-cutting thing and just watching movies on stuff like Netflix and other streaming services like that. So if something like the Oscars isn't being broadcast online... like, I'm not going to go out and buy cable just for that one night when the rest of the time all my other streaming needs are met. So I do wonder how many people actually are watching the Oscars. They just have to resort to something like illegal streaming. And that, of course, does not count for ratings or views at all. Yeah, I'm part of the problem. but to talk about whether or not the Oscars are relevant, I think they're probably not. They're certainly not as relevant as they used to be. And one of the reasons I find for that is that it's just become another demographic for the industry. It's just become another audience to pander to. You know, like, you make movies for children so that children and their families will go and see these movies. That's how you make your money off of those types of movies. You make superhero movies for comic book nerds, but you can also make them really funny in a family-friendly way to pull in a big demographic like that. You make R-rated horror movies for an audience. The Academy Awards, they are just being used that same way. Movies are made just to win those awards because the Academy formula, as we noted on our last show, is very easily recognizable. You can make a particular type of movie, like a historical biopic about racism in NASA, and it will end up getting nominated because that's exactly the kind of film that gets nominated for an Oscar. There aren't many surprises anymore, and because so much of who wins and who gets nominated is based on campaigning, like Harvey Weinstein really putting money into promoting a film, it's like an election, and each of the films is a candidate. They're going to be voted on, and so much of it is like stumping and doing this promotion. And so it really does seem to me like, you know, maybe the Oscars are relevant, but the Oscars don't decide what types of movies get made anymore, if they ever did. Instead, they just decide what kinds of movies are made to win Oscars. You know? Like, in the past, there's been emphasis placed on the idea that the movie that wins Best Picture, we will probably get other movies like it. You know, people hope that something like Inception or Arrival win Best Picture, because maybe that will mean that we'll get a lot more really smart science fiction films. But that's not what ends up happening. Movies win Best Picture, and it usually just determines what kind of movies are likely to win Best Picture in the future. And more movies like that will get made, and they will make a bit of money, and they will gain prestige, because they're just made to win awards. Anyway, I feel like I'm starting to go in circles with this rant, but it's kind of a shame. You know, I too, Robin, remember when I was younger, the Oscars were a really big event. Maybe that's just nostalgia, but they felt like something a lot bigger. It could just be the host, too. The host, really, I don't know.
Well, I do think you're right that there weren't a lot of things for people to get invested in this year. Like you mentioned, people tuned in last year because they wanted to see, is this the year Leonardo DiCaprio is finally going to win Best Actor? But they didn't have any of these stories this year because the stuff that was nominated, I don't think anyone had a real emotional investment in them or anything, because it's kind of like, well, it might be Casey Affleck winning. I don't really have much investment in him, or Emma Stone, because they're both like only been in the industry a couple years, like they haven't been nominated multiple times and not won, so it's like nobody's going to really tune in just for them. And a movie like La La Land, which people liked, but I don't think anyone was really like blown away and loved it enough to want to see it win Best Picture. So it's like that was the problem with the nominees this year, is that you didn't really have anyone that you were overly rooting for. Like, I know 2 years ago, Birdman was my favorite movie of the year, and Michael Keaton I desperately wanted to win, so my main reason for tuning in is to see how well it would do and if the Academy would recognize a film that was so unusual, but it didn't have any of the emotional investment this year.
Absolutely true. So let's just start picking apart these awards, and I'm going to save, you know, obviously the thing on everybody's minds with regards to the Oscars is the end, the big Best Picture screw-up where La La Land was announced as Best Picture by mistake, and it turned out that Moonlight had won, and man, that whole thing, it was an incredible surprise, but I'm going to save that until a little later, just so we can talk about the rest of the Oscars, because I do have some things to say, even though we all seem to agree that it was a fairly lackluster year overall. So let's talk a bit about the host. We've already touched on Jimmy Kimmel as the host of the Oscars, and TK, you said that you know, the host is so important to the Oscars. And it's so true. The host is really what defines the tone of the awards ceremony because, you know, it's always going to be the same. There's always going to be the red carpet. There's always going to be, you know, the same general structure of the awards show. It's going to be usually in the same theater. And no matter how they decide to decorate it, mostly it's just going to be the red and gold of the Oscars. So the host is one of the things that can potentially set each year apart from the last one. And, yeah, Jimmy Kimmel. Robin, what did you think of his hosting gig?
Wasn't too big a fan of it. Like I mentioned last week that I've never watched that much of Jimmy Kimmel, so I don't really have much of an investment for him. And he's a guy, I guess he's fine hosting a talk show, but hosting an Oscar ceremony? I don't know. I mean, he had some parts, jokes that landed very well, but he had a lot of really flat moments. It's always a bad sign when, like, in the middle of the show, the hosts start making jokes about how badly they're bombing when their jokes aren't making, like,
yeah,
which he did at one point. That's always a terrible sign when the audience isn't reacting. And I'm surprised they didn't make the obvious jokes because they had one section where they were talking about their influences, and he was saying, one of my biggest influences was David Letterman. And my first thought was, yeah, David Letterman bombed when he hosted the Oscars too. So I thought he was going to make that joke about himself, but he never did. But yeah, I wasn't too impressed by him overall.
Yeah, I had read an interview on Up Rocks with Jimmy Kimmel the day before the Oscars about his hosting gig, and he was saying in that interview that he actually really liked David Letterman's hosting. And all I could think was like, oh, this does not bode well. Letterman bombed. So, and this is the guy that he's holding up as one of the best Oscar hosts? No, no, it's not going to be good.
Uma, Oprah, Oprah, Uma, Uma, Oprah. Oh, God.
Okay, but you know what? That is more memorable than anything Jimmy Kimmel did this year. I have to say.
I'm really sorry. I'm going to chip in here. I like the bit when he was tearing Matt Damon's performance in So We Bought a Zoot apart. That was. I would watch that for 2 hours. Like just watch it with him commenting on it. I thought that was really, really good. And like, if you pay attention to the Matt Damon Jimmy Kimmel feud, like there are a few pot shots there that were pretty funny that I got a big kick out of. I thought his opening monologue was fine, but like again, not memorable. Like I remember more of Louis C.K.'s best short documentary presentation than I do Kimmel's probably most of the ceremony from what I saw.
Anything. The thing is, I don't remember any of the jokes that Kimmel himself delivered. And I was talking about this on our last show, but I find that Jimmy Kimmel's comedy, on his show especially, is getting other people to be funny. He is rarely the joke. It's always, you know what's funny? Huh? Matt Damon. It's fun to make fun of Matt Damon, right? Or on his show, he'll do things like, I asked parents to tell their kids that they ate all the Halloween candy and record the kids' reactions. And then he'll do like a montage of the kids' reactions thinking that their parents ate the Halloween candy. But that's not Jimmy Kimmel being funny. That's him presenting something funny. And I found that that was exactly what he did here, yet again. He was always like handing off the joke to something else. We're going to do a hidden camera prank on this busload of tourists. I'm going to tweet the president. I'm going to have celebrities even do a bit directly for my from my show and read mean tweets. And you know what? The Oscars mean tweets were not good. It was a lame mean tweets. He's done funnier ones on his show. And so, yeah, overall, I just found his hosting was so forgettable and so unremarkable. And even the Matt Damon thing, it got really old. I thought that he did it, like, a little too often, to the point where by the time Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were presenting an award and Kimmel kept making the joke where he'd, like, try to play Matt Damon off, I was just getting annoyed by him. I was just like, yeah, okay, dude, we get it. But, like, the show is already running long. Can we move it along a little bit?
Actually, I enjoyed that Ben Affleck and guest. I thought that was
See,
fun.
That's a good joke, but he didn't need to then continue doing it. Yeah, and I've heard that the whole Matt Damon running gag through the Oscars was going to have a payoff at the end, but it didn't get to because of the giant Best Picture thing. So in the end, I ended up feeling like a lot of his bits just like started and then went nowhere. Like tweeting Donald Trump. Why didn't they just get some fake Donald Trump tweets to show where he's just like, you know, Jimmy Kimmel, the words are fake, you know, something like that. Instead, it was Jimmy Kimmel just being like, I'm just going to tweet this to President Trump. I tweeted it to President Trump. I'm going to drop candy from the ceiling. Twice.
And I was actually expecting Alec Baldwin to make an appearance as Trump to pay that off, but it never happened.
Yeah, there was no payoff to that. And boy, there was a payoff to the hidden camera prank with a busload of tourists, but it was the most awkward, awful payoff. he was like, okay, so there's this tour bus of people doing the, like, Map to the Stars tour, and we've told them they're going to be a part of some special exhibit at this theater, but they're actually going to walk into the Oscars. So right away with this whole bit, I was like, this is staged. This is staged, right? You're in Hollywood on Oscar night.
Yes.
You really think that no one's going to notice that it's Oscar night and you're going to the Oscar theater. On top of that, the road in front of the theater must be closed. They must close that whole thing down so that people can walk the red carpet and the press can be there. They have to do that. So right away, I was just like, this is so staged. But you know what? I don't know if it was, because when they led all of those sort of bumbling tourists into the theater, they just did not give anybody any. They just took selfies. I could not believe that how many of them were just like recording everything as they walked around. They were on like national TV. You don't need to record that. You're going to be on YouTube everywhere. Like, oh my God. It was so awkward and went nowhere. And the buildup was so long. I don't know, Robin, what'd you think of that entire hidden camera bit?
I thought the exact same thing you do, is like, okay, come on, like, if these people are such movie buffs and they're in Hollywood on Oscar night, they're not actually at home watching the Oscars, this doesn't ring true to me. Like, are they really not going to be able to figure this out? Because wasn't the whole gag is, you're going to look at Oscar costumes while conveniently the Oscars are on. But then the way they were acting, it just seemed like how, like, clueless people would act maybe if they were in that situation, just wanting to take pictures and stuff without actually like playing along with the celebrities or anything. They did actually act how you'd expect real awkward people to act in that situation. So I'm not sure how they pulled this off, what their intentions were, if there were supposed to be like more bits as part of this or something. It was very confusing.
Yeah. You would think that Kimmel would at least have like bits to do with these people who come in. It's like he thought the fact that he did this was funny enough, and once the tourists were there, he didn't have to do anything else. But he really should have had things lined up, like, you know, let's get them all up on stage to present an Oscar, or, you know, just some dumb little thing like that. But no, they just all acted really awkward. Who was it? He made, like, someone give her sunglasses to one of the tourists. Who was it again? It was, like, Nicole Kidman or something.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it might have been.
Oh, man. It was just, boy, oh, boy. Oh, and you know Kimmel was off to a, just, like, jumping around here before I forget this. You know Kimmel was off to a bad start when first he called Meryl Streep overrated. And then he said O.J. was beloved when O.J. Made in America won Best Documentary. He said it jokingly, but he was like, yes, our beloved O.J. And this was like 10 minutes after he was like, Meryl Streep is a terrible actress. Look at all the awful performances she's given. Oh, man. It seemed like he was floundering through a lot of it.
That's when he started making the jokes about how dead the audience was. That's when he knew he was falling off a cliff.
and he kept also making jokes about how no one had seen any of the nominees. It's like, you can make one joke about that, or two jokes about that, but everyone in that room had seen them, you know?
Yeah.
These were the people who made all of the movies. It did not play well at all.
I mean, it worked for something like Captain Fantastic with Viggo Mortensen, which nobody saw, but when you start doing it with every movie, then it runs pretty thin.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, man, he was not good. I doubt he'll be invited back.
But like you said, even though Letterman bombed, people still quote Oprah Uma 20 years later, but nobody's going to quote anything Jimmy Kimmel did.
He even tried to do a name bit with Mahershala Ali, where he was like, are you going to give your name's Mahershala, are you going to give your kid a really normal name? And Mahershala Ali was like, your name's Marie, or just something like that. It's just dead on arrival. It was terrible, man. But of course, even though the host is sort of like the glue that tries to hold the ceremony together, there are lots of other presenters and performances going on. So maybe we can talk a bit about those, besides Kimmel's hosting job and besides the big ending. Were there any like notable bits or appearances or things that really stood out to you? Like the intro, was there anything about the intro that stood out?
Not really. I mean, I guess it was something new. I don't think I had seen that before, like starting a musical number into the lobby and bringing it actually into the theater. So couldn't really complain about that. That was a nice way to start off the show.
More than that,
the tone is a thousand times. Sorry. They have.
Never watched the Tonys.
More than that, I was surprised that they started the ceremony with one of the best song nominees. That surprised me. They don't usually do that. It's usually something else. Cool, I guess. But yeah.
It's economical. It prevents them from having to do it later.
It's so weird, you know. They always talk about wanting to make the Oscars shorter, and the Oscars always go overtime, and there are always loads of bits that I see them that they could potentially cut. I figured, yeah, they're doing the intro as one of the best song nominees for the purposes of time. They can speed things up. But there are so many parts that dragged. I don't know. It never actually seems to get shorter, despite what they want to do with it. I thought the song performances were all pretty good, especially the performance for Moana with, like, the flag dancers behind her. That was a good song. It was a good performance. I thought that was really
good.
And I really
wanted Dwayne Johnson to actually sing like he said he was going to, but unfortunately not.
I was surprised that he didn't do more of that.
But it was just so surreal to see The Rock at the Academy Awards. Just after all his years as being a wrestler, that he's finally made it so big in Hollywood that he's appearing at the Oscars. That's so awesome. And maybe one of these days he'll actually get nominated.
What were you going to say, TK?
I was going to say, I really wanted him to sing that You're Welcome song, because it is easily the most catchiest song in Moana. I think so, anyway. But her performance was excellent. Did anyone else catch her getting clipped in the back of the head by one of the flag bearers? Because that was kind of funny.
And she just kept going. Yeah, she was great. I thought it was funny, though, Sting just couldn't hold his own in comparison to the other performances. Like, it was him and a guitar and a spotlight, and man, yeah, no, you got to go bigger than that.
If you're Sting, I don't know if you have to.
I personally think he just didn't compare. I think that was his attitude. I think he thought, I'm Sting, I can just do this. But the other songs really stood out more for me. Did anybody else notice that Mel Gibson looked like he was just high as fuck on cocaine the whole time?
I love that every time they made a joke about him, they would cut to him in the audience, and he just looked batshit crazy. He always put off this big diabolical smile and stuff, and it made me hope even more that he would win Best Director. It's like, oh my god, he's totally out of it right now. Please put him on stage with a live mic, but it didn't happen.
You know what I loathe is that he was on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert about a month and a half ago, and he had the most glorious beard I had ever seen. And then when he showed up at the Oscars, it was clean shaven. I think I got really upset because it looked like a diabolical, like, villain. Beard, like, it was all kind of gray, like a kind of a curled mustache. Like, he looked like Snidely Whiplash had let himself go.
Is that the beard that made him look like the Burger King?
Yeah, it was great. It was fantastic. I like, it looked good on him, and I don't know why he shaved. It would have added to that. I think it would have added to the madness look he was trying to do.
every time it cut to him, he was like baring his teeth, like he was gritting his teeth and like hyperventilating. He just seemed to be like just like breathing so heavily throughout the whole thing. And when Hacksaw Ridge won for I can't remember if it was when it won for sound mixing or editing, but when it won one of his awards, it cut to Mel, because the guy thanked Mel Gibson in his speech, and it cut to Mel, and Mel did this, like, weird, like, fist thing, like, he held up his fist and kind of went, yeah! It was just, it's so crazy. And as I mentioned, you know, Kimmel was doing those candy drops where little pouches of candy would parachute down from the ceiling. Actually, just as a side note on this, they always played The Ride of the Valkyries when they dropped those packages, like in Apocalypse Now. But in Apocalypse Now, they're fucking bombing the Vietnamese. Is this really appropriate?
You know what I was thinking of?
Nope.
Is that actually is that the one time they used parachutes for that gag was Ernest Goes to Camp, where they drop the turtles on the parachutes and they play Ride of the Valkyries.
Oh my god. So
I wasn't actually thinking of Apocalypse Now. I was thinking of Ernest Goes to Camp.
Well, anyway, Mel Gibson somehow got his hands on some Red Rope licorice, because cutting to a commercial break right before, they showed a clip of Mel Gibson, like, just, he looks so crazy. You can find a GIF of this online, I guarantee it. Just him chewing this red licorice and looking out of his mind. I loved it. Every time it cut to Mel Gibson, I just laughed my ass off. It was so great. So let's see. Let's talk a bit about the winners. Really, none of the presenters were especially noteworthy, I guess.
I think the most awkward one, I thought, was when they decided to bring out Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan, because there are just so many rumors that, well, making those 50 Shades of Grey movies, that they really cannot stand each other, and they just looked so uncomfortable to be out there again, because every time apparently they do press interviews, they really look like they would rather be anywhere else, and it showed there again.
There were a lot of awkward things like that. Like, of course, you know, all the Casey Affleck stuff just felt kind of yucky because of the sexual assault allegations against him right now. So when he won for Best Actor, like, Brie Larson famously, like, didn't hug him at, I think it was the Golden Globes, and, like, really gave him the cold shoulder. And here she had to give him an award again, and it was just, it came off as very awkward to me. And I felt like there was a lot of just stuff like that, that it just didn't work. It was not comfortable. Even, like, Jason Bateman and Kate McKinnon came out and did a bit, I guess, but I didn't find it very funny. It really, I don't know, man. I guess not a good year. I also thought, you know, we had all predicted that Viola Davis was going to win Best Supporting Actress, and of course she did. But I even thought that her acceptance speech was a little awkward, because she said this whole thing about how the people with the most potential are all dead, right? She was like,
"Yeah, I didn't understand that line."
Amongst the people with the most potential go to the graveyard. It was very strange. Just very. There were a lot of little awkward moments like that throughout the night.
I think she was kind of implying that maybe the best stories are from people who are dead that you don't even know about, and that's
yeah.
the kind of character she played in that one of the Oscar, maybe? I don't know.
I could see that, but I don't know. That maybe she was just very emotional because she won the Oscar, but it wasn't clear. I was kind of confused by what she was trying to say. Were there any other, like, winners that that really stood out to you besides, of course, the big one we're building up to?
Yes, I want to get you started on this, Gil, but Suicide Squad, I'm just going to say this, in the history books, Suicide Squad and Citizen Kane both have the same amount of Oscars.
Yeah, you know what Suicide Squad has more Oscars than? Shawshank Redemption. Shawshank Redemption was nominated for 7 Oscars, did not win any. Suicide Squad won an Oscar.
Can someone please also explain to me why The Jungle Book won Best Visual Effects over Doctor Strange? I don't get it. I just don't.
I was voting for Kubo and the Two Strings in that category, and I also cannot fully explain why it didn't win. I mean, The Jungle Book, to be fair, it was full of impressive CGI animals, but I just did not find it as visually rich and interesting as even something like Doctor Strange. You know, Doctor Strange is a pretty fluffy superhero movie, but the visual effects in that one were just utterly mind-blowing.
As I've been describing it, Doctor Strange, who wants to see some motherfucking fractals?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
But to give Robin his Suicide Squad rant. Okay, so for fuck's sake, guys. I mean, really? Really? Somebody won an Oscar for writing damaged on Jared Leto's forehead. And the design of the tattoos on the Joker are a running joke on the internet. There's that funny clip, I believe I've played it on the podcast in the past, just the, you know, oh, I definitely want a skull, you know, and maybe put some, like, clown lips on my arm. There's a whole animated short about the Joker getting all of the ridiculous tattoos he has in Suicide Squad, including the word damaged on his forehead, including the word ha, like laughter, ha ha ha, and make it jagged but, you know, clean. Like, the look of the Joker is all in the makeup, and it was terrible in Suicide Squad. Likewise, Harley Quinn, her makeup is smudged lipstick. Like, they just smudge the lipstick a bit and powder her face a bit. It's just not that impressive. Obviously, the real reason this film got nominated was for Killer Croc, and I'll give them that Killer Croc looked pretty cool, but honestly, nothing about Suicide Squad is Academy Award worthy. And, you know, I hate Deadpool, I hate the movie Deadpool, but I will say, I think Deadpool was more deserving of a Best Makeup Oscar for the burnt Ryan Reynolds face makeup than Suicide Squad was.
I'm really sorry to interrupt, Gil. I thought a lot of the makeup work in Star Trek Beyond was really good.
Yeah. I would have given it to Star Trek Beyond.
It'll be interesting to see, like, if you look back through the records books, if Suicide Squad is officially, like, the worst movie to win an Oscar, because a lot of bad movies have gotten nominated before, because I seem to remember that Norbit was nominated one year for Best Makeup, but it didn't actually win, but Suicide Squad did, I'd like to see, like, an Oscar historian determine that, like, objectively determine what is the worst film to ever win an Academy Award of any kind.
I can't talk about Suicide Squad winning an Oscar without inadvertently, like, unintentionally making a stink face. Like, I just find my lip curling up into a sneer as I talk about it. It's just so annoying. It's one of those things that, when it won, and I started saying to myself, Academy Award-winning movie Suicide Squad, it started making me think of, like, those weird Oscar-y things, like 2-time Academy Award nominee Jonah Hill. And here's something funny. Now half the principal cast of Superbad are, like, Oscar-nominated or winning actors.
That's crazy. Yes. So Michael Cera, he's going to be up next year.
Christopher McLovin. McLovin's going to win an Oscar. Here's something just about the ceremony in general that I noticed, and it relates to the winners because it relates to the speeches, and we will talk about the speeches, but where did that thank you ticker go? You know how they were going to give, like, a little ticker on the bottom of the screen where the people who won can thank specific people, and it means that they don't have to verbally thank them. They can just have them, like, run across the bottom. You remember that thing, guys?
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten about that. What did happen to that?
Where did that go? Caitlin actually had a pretty good answer to it. So, we were talking about how we expected all of the acceptance speeches to be highly political. I thought it was pretty tastefully handled. There were a number of political speeches, but I didn't find any of them to go on too long or to be, like, eye-rollingly awkward or anything like that. I thought a lot of them were really heartfelt, especially Oscar Farhadi, who won for Best Foreign Film and couldn't be at the Oscars because of all the bullshit travel bans going on. The speech that someone read in his stead was really moving and, like, really on point. So I gotta give it to them for the political speeches that there were. But Caitlin thinks they removed the thank you ticker so that people would have to verbally thank their loved ones and all the people they want to thank and wouldn't have time to be political. I think that's probably likely.
That does make sense, because I think people were in such a hurry most of the time to thank the proper people that they didn't get enough time to say what they really wanted to say.
What did you think of the speeches overall, Robin? And TK, if you saw any of the speeches.
Well, they were just, a lot of them were just kind of generic, like the same standard, like, thank you stuff. And there were some moving moments, like the statement read about like from the Iranian director about how he wasn't going to show up there, but nothing too memorable. Like there was, I know there's always that excitement, like sometimes where like someone who hasn't won an award that you've been waiting to win an award gets up there and makes like a really memorable speech because they're so excited. But there weren't too many of them. I know Emma Stone looked legitimately tickled to be up there, but like you said, Viola Davis. This is a woman that you were expecting, like had. What everyone has been wanting to win an Oscar for like so many years, and she finally gets her moment, and then she gives the most awkward, confusing speech. So fortunately there weren't too many memorable ones this year.
I kind of worry that Emma Stone is going to be the new Anne Hathaway, because when she won the Oscar, I was really reminded of when Anne Hathaway won the Oscar, and she was just like so delighted and overcome. And, you know, she's so beautiful and all, she's so nice and everybody loves her. And I feel like since winning her Oscar, Anne Hathaway has had a lot of backlash against her. Just, she's like too sweet, I guess. People seem to hate her because she's too perfect in a way. It's, I don't know what it is, jealousy, whatever you want to call it. People really don't like Anne Hathaway anymore. And I kind of worry that that's about to happen with Emma Stone, because La La Land has had a lot of backlash since it won all the Golden Globes. And here she wins for Best Actress and gives that very Anne Hathaway-esque speech. I don't know. Do you guys think the same fate awaits Emma Stone?
Possibly. Has it kind of happened to Jennifer Lawrence as well since she won? Like, isn't there kind of a backlash against her in a way? Not as much as Anne Hathaway, but I kind of feel it was the same thing with her when she won. So I wonder if I could see the same thing happening to Emma Stone.
Sadly, I've also found that Jennifer Lawrence's film, like the quality of the film she's been in, hasn't been all that high since she won. So since the last time she won. So that probably also plays into it. But yeah, you're right. There's definitely been a bit of backlash against Jennifer Lawrence too. I don't know. Maybe that's just how it goes. And we'll see. Emma Stone's pretty great though. I really like Emma Stone. So hopefully it doesn't hit her too hard.
One other thing I wanted to mention about an award, when Fantastic Beasts won its technical award, I was kind of hoping that Eddie Redmayne would go up and make the acceptance speech just to troll you.
You really... I like how this year's Oscars, it's like the things Robin's most excited about is get me started on a rant about some shit like Eddie Redmayne or Suicide Squad.
I still remember how paranoid you were last year that he was going to beat Leo. And since he wasn't around nominated for anything this year, I was just kind of hoping he would just pop up somewhere just to make you mad.
But see, I kind of would have loved if he had beaten Leo, because the internet would have finally fully turned against Eddie Redmayne with me. Most people would just despise the guy if he robbed Leo of the Academy Award. So... again, just, you know, we're right on the cusp of talking about that big ending, but were there any other, like, were there snubs, were there surprises or disappointments, any other big standout moments for you guys at the Oscars this year?
Really like seeing Michael J. Fox get to make an appearance and present an award with Seth Rogen, who looked like he was geeking out so much because he was such a Back to the Future fan. So it's always nice when stars who don't appear in the spotlight too much anymore get a chance to come out at the Oscars. It was kind of the same thing with Christopher Reeve in the 90s, where he appeared, which I think was his first public appearance after he'd been paralyzed. So I always like those moments when the stars who have gone through a difficult time get to come out there again.
Yeah, it was really great to see him again. And they presented the Science and Tech Awards, right? Like the little thing on that?
Oh, no, that was, who was that? That was two other actors. No, I think they actually presented some awards.
The Science and Tech Awards were actually one of the, a surprisingly noteworthy moment for me because I was watching with a bunch of friends and we all just started laughing when they were talking about how awards were given to, like, you know, 5 different cameras and 3 new sound recording systems and an animatronic horse. And I started going, like, that animatronic horse has more Oscars than I do. Damn, you know, I mean, he was good, but he was no animatronic horse. So some animatronic horse jokes. And we were also joking about, like, why didn't Warhorse win for its animatronic horse? It got snubbed. Seabiscuit got snubbed, man.
You found a way to entertain yourself during the driest part of the show.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And also seeing Jackie Chan at the Oscars was awesome as well.
I wanted him, because when they panned over to him, he was on a balcony. I wanted him, like, flip off that balcony, man.
Yes, I know. I was hoping for a stunt.
When they panned over, I was like, come on, do it. Just jump into the audience. Ah, yeah, nothing. But like you, I just wasn't invested. You know, I had low investment going into the awards. I was happy that Moonlight won as many things as it did. It won more than I expected it to. And La La Land still got, like, 6, I think it got 6 Academy Awards. No real surprise there, I guess. Until...
And also, I want to mention that for one of the first years ever, pretty much until they got to Best Picture at least, all my picks that I gave last week, most of them are right.
Yeah, we were on point for Best Actor, Best Actress, Supporting Actress, and Director. Like, we got all of those absolutely right.
And that's never a good sign, because it means the show is just way too predictable and generic. But then it threw a curveball.
And what a curveball.
Sorry, before we get into the curveball, I'm still furious that Jackie lost her Best Original Score. Like, I know that La La Land was going to win. Like, I knew that. But, like, I am still thinking about that, about the piano track and that in Jackie. It was unbelievably good.
Moonlight had a fantastic score as well.
Good one. Yeah, but no, the one from Jackie is just, like, burned into my head. Like, it was beautiful.
So then it happened. Oh, my God. TK, you watched a clip of this, right? We can talk about this, like, down to the second.
I felt so bad for Warren Beatty. Like, so bad. And Faye, like, just taking off stage. Like, just leaving immediately. But I felt so bad for Warren. And, like, I really liked his explanation because, like, that's what he would do. Like with any hesitation. And I thought Kimmel played it kind of fairly well. Like, Warren, what did you do? I thought it was handled as well as it could have been handled. But
it was the fact that it happened that was so surprising, more than how it played out.
Oh, very much so.
So imagine, if you will, guys, an alternate scenario. Because at this point, we know that a duplicate envelope with the winner for Best Actress, which was the award that was, like, presented... Was it right before? It was right before Best Picture, right?
Yes, Best Actress.
Best Actress.
That's why I was kind of hoping that Leonardo DiCaprio would open the envelope and say, the Best Actress goes to Moonlight? But it didn't work out that way, but that would have been hilarious.
But imagine, if you will, an alternate reality where instead of Best Actress before Best Picture, Best Actor was presented. And then Best Picture was announced as Manchester by the Sea... At which point Matt Damon would get up and start giving a speech, only to have the Oscar taken away from him by Jimmy Kimmel and given to Moon. Now, that is how you end a Matt Damon bit. That would have made the whole thing worth it, that whole Matt Damon setup for me. Because, my God, would that have been insane. Of course, immediately, if that had happened, people would have called fake. I don't think this was fake. So we know now that the wrong envelope was handed to Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. And if you roll the tape, you see that Beatty very clearly knows something is wrong. He opens it and he goes, and Faye Dunaway thinks he's just being cute. And she just reads out La La Land.
But see, that's when Beatty stops and says, I think I've been handed the wrong envelope. That's what he should have done. Right?
I think what he was doing was he showed her the envelope as if to say, what should we do? But she took it as him being cute and letting her read it, and she just read La La Land. I think that that's the way I interpret what happened. I don't know, Robin, do you think it was some other way?
No, I think that's about right, because I was thinking that he was doing this, like, awkward comedy bit, and I thought that's exactly what he was doing, that he was just saying, okay, Faye, you can read it for me and stuff, but that's not what he wanted her to do.
Regardless, she there's a funny meme going around where Beatty and Dunaway had just finished saying, the thing that art seeks out the most, like, seeks to show us, is the truth, and now here's the wrong Best Picture winner. but yeah, so regardless of how it happened, boy, it happened, and it's kind of amazing to watch the producers and everyone from La La Land get up there. They take the Oscars and they give their speeches. Two producers get their speeches out. The second producer ends his speech by, but I didn't win, so it doesn't matter, because I guess he got the memo at that point. And then the producer of La La Land goes, Moonlight won. And as I was watching, I thought, like, oh, he's being, like, magnanimous, right? He's saying Moonlight deserves to win. And he's going to sort of present the award to what he considers to be the more deserving film. Maybe it would be a bit awkward, but maybe it would also be, like, a really generous move. No, this is not a joke, he says. Moonlight won. And man, oh man, like, my mind was blown. Wow. Reactions, guys? What do you think of this?
Well, I was kind of dozing off as it was going on because it was so late, and I was even briefly considering, okay, now that I've seen what's won, maybe I'll just turn it off and go to bed and stuff. And then I was instantly, like, wide awake when I was like, oh my God, is this really happening? And what's funny is a lot of other years I've gone to see the Oscars on the big screen at the Mayfair Theater here in Ottawa, and I find that a lot of the time, I didn't do it this year, but a lot of the time, like, people, once they announce the Best Picture winner, everyone just kind of flocks out of the theater. They don't care to see the speech. So I can only imagine what the reaction would have been and also when you go to those events, they have like Oscar pools where like they tally up the most picks and give out prizes. So I can only imagine them tallying up like people who chose La La Land as Best Picture and then all of a sudden having to change it to Moonlight because they changed the Best Picture winner and just screwing up everything. So it was just so surreal to watch that you couldn't believe it was really happening. You're thinking, is this a bit? Like, there's no way that something like this could happen.
Yeah, it really was just, like, dumbfounding. And I do know people who said to me, like, at work the next day, yeah, I turned it off as soon as La La Land won. And so they had missed the big moment. But, man, like, we all went nuts here. My friends and I, when we were watching it, we just like, what is going on? It was just like, it was such an incredible surprise at the end of an otherwise dull and long Oscars. TK, do you have thoughts on this? Like, this is sort of it's unprecedented that something of this magnitude, a screw up of this magnitude happened at the Oscars. What do you think?
I think people are going to remember it for a really long time. It's going to be up there with the streaker behind David Niven and that native girl picking up that Oscar for Brando. And it's going to be one of those things that just ends up in like Oscar history. And, I think it's obviously going to be memorable. And again, I felt bad for Beatty because that producer snatched the winning envelope out of his hand. And you don't do that to Warren Beatty. You just don't. I was kind of pissed at him, actually.
Well, he lost his job. The two people in charge of his envelopes lost their jobs.
No, I meant the producer from La La Land that took the envelope to show to the camera. Like, if you watch it, he rips it out of his hand. I'm like, that's just mean.
I mean, to be fair, that guy was probably just, like, confused and furious at that point. Like, what an embarrassment to get up there and do your heartfelt acceptance speech and then have to give up the award, like... He must have felt like such a chump. And I mean, I think he handled it well and with grace, but man, he must have been just pissed and sad. It's funny, you know, those two accountants from, was it PricewaterhouseCooper? Is that the name of the?
Yeah.
They lost their jobs because they gave the wrong envelope and led to this whole screw up. But it's funny, I was reading comments on one of those articles about it on Reddit, and somebody said, and they made a good point. They said, are you kidding me? Those two people are the least likely people to make this mistake again.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, they're never going to make that mistake again. Should have just kept them on. But boy, man, like, I read this article that talked about how things like, you know, the Cubs winning and the huge Super Bowl comeback and the Oscar mix-up, all of these events prove we're in a simulation.
Exactly.
Someone wrote a whole article about this, like, philosophical idea about all these things. They prove that we're in a simulation, and we've sort of served our purpose in the experiment, so now the experimenters are just throwing random weirdness at us. They're like, yeah, but what if Donald Trump won the election? Oh, well, wait, no, you know what? We're going to mix up the Oscars in a way that's never happened before. Oh, what if the Cubs win the World Series? Like,
are you saying it's just a bunch of mods that are fucking with us at this point?
Yes.
Because that's what it sounds like.
Yes, it's mods.
Those sons of bitches.
Yeah. I can't believe that happened. Otherwise, not a noteworthy year, but boy, am I going to remember it for that.
Like I said, I was falling asleep, but that kind of woke me up and wound me up because I had to spend the next half hour surfing online trying to find out what happened.
Yeah, really. So, any final thoughts on this year's Oscars? Like, you know, we've talked about whether or not they're relevant. What needs to happen next year for the Oscars to be good again?
More screw-ups, I guess. More mistakes. But seriously, do you think there's any truth to those conspiracy theories that somebody orchestrated this on purpose just to generate publicity and maybe think that this type of thing will get people to tune in next year?
I mean, maybe it was a stunt, but I don't think it was. Because the thing is, if it was a stunt, it failed. It didn't do well. You yourself pointed out, Robin, that, you know, people tune out right after the winner is announced. People would have already turned off their sets by the time the stunt took effect. And, I don't know, it's like egg on the face of the Academy. So, it's embarrassing. I don't think it's the kind of thing that they'd want people to think of them. Like, oh, the Oscars made such a big bungle. I think the Academy is probably really embarrassed by this.
And I'm willing to bet that next year we will get a nonstop stream of jokes about the wrong envelope at next year's ceremony.
Oh, yeah, guaranteed. I read an article today about a movie theater in London that jokingly started playing La La Land before a screening of Moonlight.
And then did that go over well?
Yeah, it went over well. They only played about a minute of La La Land, and then they switched over to Moonlight. So people still got their movie, but they got a good little laugh at the beginning.
They cut that opening song? Ah, oh, you can't do that.
But yeah, TK, what would it take for you to tune in next year?
A killer host. Like, I think
who would you get?
Oh, man. I don't know. Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson.
Oh. Yeah, you know what? Okay, hang on. I have two conditions for next year's Oscar. One, we get like Louis C.K. or Conan O'Brien or like one of those guys to host.
Oh, I got it for you, TK. How about we do another two-host ceremony with Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen?
Done. Absolutely. There in a heartbeat. And second of all, Mel Gibson has to direct another movie that will get nominated for next year. That's all I want. That's all I want.
Oh, man. Like, go to Giphy, GIPHY.com, and search for Mel Gibson Oscar GIFs, and you will just see the funniest stuff, like the highlights of the entire ceremony. Mel Gibson acting crazy.
What's funny is, didn't his wife look bored out of her mind? Like, wasn't she texting and stuff while the camera was on her?
Yeah. She's so much younger than him.
Oh my god, this licorice gif is everything I ever wanted to see. He just looks perfect. He's so happy.
He just looks so crazy.
No, he just looks happy. Yeah. He's got licorice. He looks ecstatic. This is great. And see, this is why the beard would have made it better.
Oh my god, yeah, as if he didn't look crazy enough. All right. Well, I think with that, we can lay the 89th Oscars to rest. Actually, no, we can't. I do have one more thing to say. You know what, guys? They have to knock it out of the park next year. Because it's the 90th Oscars. They got to do it. They got to do something big. We'll see.
Well, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, I think, would qualify.
Yeah, you know, like, that would pull in. They just got to do more stuff that people like, you know. Jimmy Kimmel is nobody's favorite late night host. So just get someone like Conan or get Patrick Stewart. I don't know. More, please. Put some effort into it, Academy.
Oh, one thing we forgot to mention is the In Memoriam snubs, and the one that I noticed this year was Miguel Ferrer.
It's true, yeah. And no Abe Vigoda. But, you know, that could just mean he's still alive.
Yeah, we were hoping for him to come out at the end.
with the La La Land Moonlight screw-up, you know, who knows? Maybe Vigoda will turn up at next year's Oscars and be like, I'm not dead. Oh, speaking of I'm not dead, the In Memoriam segment, I wasn't as moved as I hoped. Like, you'd think they'd just have easy pickings for the In Memoriam reel because so many beloved actors died. But I found that the montage itself wasn't especially good. They didn't play enough clips. Like, they played Gene Wilder, and I started getting choked up. But the song choice was good. I just didn't find the reel itself to be anything special. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I agree, because I actually liked earlier in the night a lot of the montages they showed of all the actors winning, like, over the course of the Academy's history. I thought that was well done, so I was hoping they would do more of that, like, sprinkle in more clips. And it was kind of funny afterwards, I was kind of thinking there were a lot of snubs. I was thinking, like, where's Alan Rickman? Where's David Bowie? And it was like, oh, yeah, they died early 2016, so they were shown last year. Mm-hmm. But there were still a lot to choose from, so I thought they would show, like, more clips as a tribute.
I was just joking about Abe Vigoda not being dead. Someone in the In Memoriam reel wasn't dead. They screwed up there too. Producer Jan Chapman was featured in the reel as her friend Janet Patterson, who was dead.
Oh yeah, they showed the wrong photo, right?
They showed Jan Chapman's photo, and she was apparently really upset about that. But awkward, right? Way to go, Oscars. Yeah. Some people are really getting fired over this year's Oscars.
I hope so.
Heads are on chopping blocks, man. So they better put something together good for the 90th. And with that, let's play the Ticket Price is Right, the box office prediction game where we try to predict the opening weekend box office grosses of movies being released this week, and we also look back on last week's predictions. We only predicted one movie last week, and that movie was Get Out. And guess who won it? It was TK.
Really? What did I guess?
You had the high bid with $25 million. I should be clear that our bets were all between $20 and $25 million, which would all have been great amounts of money for Get Out to make because it had a budget of $4.5 million. But it surpassed them all and made $33 million, which I think is awesome. It's a hit. Mm-hmm. And TK, you thought it was going to make more money than us, so you won. You're still way out in the lead with 5 points. Robin is at 3 points, and I'm at 2 points. What is going on? Everything is backwards now.
Exactly. Another thing that shows world's a simulation.
Yeah, the world's a simulation. So this time we are predicting the opening totals for two movies. First up is Logan, the R-rated Wolverine movie. Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart claim they're leaving their X-Men roles behind after this film. It has a budget of $127 million. Robin, how much do you think it's going to make opening weekend?
Well, it's getting great reviews and universal acclaim, so I think it's going to do monster business. So I'll go with $90 million.
$90 million. I'm going to say a little less than that. It's still going to do incredibly well, but it's still an R-rated film, so I'm going to say $75 million. TK, what do you think?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with 85. You guys snuck in. Gilly took my pick for that. I think it's going to do bonkers at the box office.
Do you care to imitate Patrick Stewart? Do you have a Patrick Stewart impression, TK?
T. Oh, great. Hot.
Logan. Oh, boy.
Welcome to the Academy Awards. Actually, that's more Sean Connery.
Yeah, somebody get Sean Connery out from the mothballs and put him as host. And then the other film coming out this week, bravely going up against Logan, is Sam Worthington in The Shack. It's just a movie about like a magical shack that lets the guy visit his dead daughter, I think, or his dead wife, his dead something.
Ugh. With Academy Award nominee Octavia Spencer.
Yep. I couldn't find the budget on this one, so it's anybody's guess. I don't think it has a big budget. Robin, how much is The Shack going to make?
I've barely heard anything about this, so I'll go really low. I'll go with $5
million. $5 million. I'm just going to go lower and say $1 million and force TK to pick what side he's on.
No, this is a really popular book series. I'm going to give it about probably 10.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah, TK knows stuff that we don't. Now it's time for the dumb joke of the week, and TK, I need your assistance with this. Do you know Murphy's Law?
That's every action is an equal opposite reaction?
No, that's not Murphy's Law.
No.
Murphy's Law.
I
Robin,
don't.
Do you know Murphy's Law?
It's a Charles Bronson movie from the 80s.
Murphy's Law is if anything can go wrong, it will go wrong. Now, do you know Cole's Law? It's thinly sliced cabbage.
Oh, God.
Oh, come on, TK. It's a food joke.
Just because it's a food joke doesn't mean it's funny.
Ah, boy, oh, boy. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so at the back row. You can contact TK by emailing tk@the-back-row.com. Robin can be reached by emailing robin.warder@the-back-row.com. Be sure to check out The Trail Went Cold at trailwentcold.com, Robin's weekly true crime podcast, and all the great writing he does at cracked.com, listverse.com, and of course, the-back-row.com, which is also where you can reach me, Gil, at the-back-row.com. Thank you so much for listening. And here's to another year of Academy Award nominated movies made to win Oscar, Academy Award screw up? I don't know. Here's to another year of fun stuff like this. I hope. We'll be right back.